Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Before we begin, I want to wish you all the best for 2026. Hopefully, it's a year of health and happiness for you and those you hold dear. The first episode of this new year has been chosen carefully. Belinda's story will resonate with many of you. She looked in the mirror at age 55, like so many of us do, and asked who the person looking back at her was. She could have sighed, shrugged, and turned the mirror around. Instead, she decided to find the woman she remembered being, found a new interest, and rose to the challenges that new interest gave her. Those challenges weren't simple, but she educated herself, and now she is educating anyone who wants to learn her lessons. Along the way, an unexpected development has further enhanced her life, and she shares her message around that too. Listen now to my conversation with Belinda Coker. If you've ever reached a moment in midlife when you thought, something has to change, I just don't know what yet, today's guest may feel like your trail guide. Belinda is an Australian hiker, writer, and educator who helps women reclaim confidence through real-world adventure. And it's the kind that's practical, not perilous. After raising three children and building businesses, she stepped onto the trail to clear her head and ended up completing multi-day solo hikes across Australia's Red Centre and even a solo crossing of Greenland and near the Arctic Circle. And that's just some of the adventures. She found Soul Treader, a community where women build confidence one safe, well-planned adventure at a time. And later she created the House Sitting Collective, showing women how flexible travel can be both freeing and secure. Imagine that. As a lipedema warrior, she's a powerful reminder that adventure belongs to every woman in almost every body. Today, Belinda joins us to talk about starting again, seeing the world differently, and finding freedom without blowing up your life. She has three important messages up for us, so I'll try to stay organized, and I hope we get there, Belinda. Boy, it sounds like we've got a lot to talk about. Belinda Coker, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Agnes. It's exciting. And Happy New Year, by the way.
Oh, and you also is gonna, I can't even believe what your year is gonna be like. So this is great. I do want to start with today because you're in Portugal hiking El Camino de Santiago. I must admit, I didn't know it went south. I've always considered the northern routes. Although for me, I think that ship has sailed because my knees just would not get me through anymore, I don't think.
Well, funnily enough, the Camino de Santiago is just one part of it, and it's kind of like a river with a whole lot of tributaries of streams and creeks and small rivers coming into this very large river. And so Caminos actually start from all over Europe. You can start a Camino in Sweden. There's one from Sweden, there's one all the way over from Eastern Europe, from Ukraine. And if you go onto a Camino website and actually have a look at the multitude of different Caminos that all converge in Camino Santiago. So we did the Portuguese one, and I started it exactly, well, 11 and a half months ago, because I had a an Achilles injury. And the Portuguese Camino is considered one of the flatter routes. And so, especially the coastal version. So we did 4 days of that as a test for my ankle to see if it would work or not. And so 4 days, we did 4 days last January, and a few days ago we got back on the trail to complete it. And today we have just crossed over from Portugal to Spain. So this morning we crossed the river. And went from Portugal to Spain, and suddenly a new language, and more expensive coffees and food and
Oh dear.
accommodation. I mean, I love Portugal. I absolutely hands down love Portugal. So, I was like, oh, bye, Portugal.
Well, and of course, I've got to be careful to, maintain the family because my son-in-law is Spanish, so I have to stay on the
I do
Spanish
like Spain too.
side. Okay, now I want to back up the bus. You reached midlife, like the rest of us looked in the mirror, and instead of throwing your hands up in the air and giving in, you accepted the challenge. Tell us about that.
So it was actually a little bit of a down point in my life. I was a solo mother for for about 10 years, and with my children going through high school, and I put work, and I had a business, and I put my family first, because as you do, I wanted to be, the mother I wanted to be. I wanted to be everything. And for about 10 years, I was, by the end of after a 10-year period, I was absolutely burnt out. And I was 55 years old. I can remember it was just after my birthday. And I looked in the mirror and I just saw this sad, tired face. And I just thought, oh my goodness, what happened to you? Like, where had that person gone that was so full of life and so positive? And I just, and suddenly the house felt lonely, and I really was reaching for the carbs. I wanted the comfort food, so I was reaching for the carbs, and to calm myself down, I might have, had a glass of wine, and I was just, I just looked at myself and I thought, yeah, no, something really has to change, because I just felt kind of invisible. I felt invisible to everybody. When your children are at those final years of high school, suddenly, everything's, their world is just opening up, and suddenly you don't have that. You're not important anymore. Yes, I had friends, and I had, and I had work, and I had all sorts of things, but I just felt something was really missing. I just didn't feel as whole as what I used to. So that was my turning point. And I remember that morning when I looked in the mirror.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think every woman I talk to goes through that period of, because you get busy with life. And especially as a single parent, it's like, phew, when was the last time I sat down by myself or had that evening by myself or out with friends, whatever. But you just suddenly go like, I used to do this, I used to do that, I used to have fun, I used to laugh a lot. What happened to that person? And so, okay, so what did you do about that look in the mirror that morning?
Well, yes, I looked in the mirror, and I just saw someone who was tired and worn out. And I just thought, right, something really does have to change. And it was actually during, it was at during the COVID time as well. So that might have had some sort of impact. But the state that I lived in Australia, there wasn't a lot of lockdown. It was still quite a free and easy sort of place to live. It wasn't, I had a brother who was down in Melbourne, and they were literally locked in their houses for 6 months at a time. It was awful. But we kind of, we had it pretty good. So a friend of mine, I sort of, was telling a friend of mine how I felt, and she said, you know what? I'm going hiking. I've just joined a hiking group. You're going to come with me. And I went, oh, yes, okay, well, yes. And I joined this hiking group. I joined up with them, and I went on this hike. And about an hour from where I lived was rainforest. And, when I'm talking about rainforest, I'm talking about an absolutely beautiful emerald green rainforest with waterfalls that it looked like something out of an Avatar movie. That really is beautiful up in that national park. And I walked up there with this group, and they were kind of all older as well. They were all in their probably 60s, 70s.
Uh-huh.
And I was one of the youngest. And they were fit and they were healthy and they were happy. And I just couldn't believe it. And I was really struggling to keep up with them. And I thought, I want to be like this when I'm their age as well. I just and but the other thing is that it is the rainforest or being out and amongst these vivid emerald green trees and it just felt like this giant sponge just soaked up all of my anxiety and my nervous system just completely relaxed. And I just remember just coming home that night, and I was on a high. I really was. I felt amazing because I'd done something for myself, but I also felt amazing because of what the rainforest had done. It was incredible. And being with these people, this group, there was probably about 20 of them. They were all over 60, 70, 80. There was even an 85-year-old woman, and she was leading the group. It's just like, my gosh.
Well, I can vouch for that because for the last 30 years, give or take, I moved cities for a brief time. I have led a seniors, and I'm using air quotes there, exercise class. And these women are all in their, there's a few in their 70s, but most of them are in their 80s and a couple in their 90s. And they are fun, they are vibrant. And nothing makes you say, I want to be that person and get your act together than hanging around with a bunch of fairly much older, like at least a decade older women who are just embracing life. So.
No, it really was a turning point. And I just, I took a look at myself and I thought, what on earth are you doing? You're not exercising like you used to. You're not looking after, you're not honoring your body. Yeah, I wasn't. And yeah.
So now you often hike solo. Did it take a while for that to become comfortable? And comfortable, I mean, both with yourself and by yourself.
Being by myself is it or actually or being with myself is for me is actually has always been quite easy, even though I'm kind of like one of those introvert extroverts. I think there's a word for us. We like talking to other people, but at some stage we'd like to go, right, okay, that's enough.
They're called
But
ambiverts. I'm one of those too.
I did have I have met somebody, and I can tell that story because that's actually quite interesting. So I don't always hike by myself now. But saying that, on Boxing Day, or the 26th of December, I will be heading to the Canary Islands in Spain to do the GR131, which is a traverse of all third of all seven Canary Islands, and it will take me around about 35 to 40 days, and that I will be solo for that one.
So how long did it take you to get comfortable sort of being way out there by yourself?
I think I took to it like a fish out of water. Sorry. It's not a fish out of water, is it? It's a like a fish and
Oh, I see.
I
And it's funny because you said that, and I knew. I said, okay, no, that makes complete sense. Like
No,
a fish
fish
in
out
water. Okay,
of
like a
fish
fish
and
in.
water. Yes, I took to it. It was just I just remember just thinking, I absolutely love this. And I would go up to this park, this Lamington National Park, with my tent, and I would camp out there, and I'd take a small bottle of wine, and I'd take a cheese and crackers and all that
Oh,
stuff, and I'd just
fabulous.
go up for the night. It was just fantastic. I mean, my children do think I'm a bit odd, but that's fine.
Give them a few more years. My children are all now sort of 40-ish, and my girls especially, they think I'm cool. So they come around to realizing that because their mother is a little off kilter, shall we say,
Yeah.
that it's okay.
Yeah.
Now you also wild camp.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us.
Okay. Yes, I do. And the funny thing is that some of the hikes I go on, there are huts, especially in New Zealand. New Zealand has 10,000 kilometers of hiking trails and 900 government huts. It is just the one of the best places to hike in the world, and some of the hikes are just absolutely amazing. And they have these huts which are, you know, if I'll talk in US dollars because it's a good baseline. So probably about $12 per night to stay in these huts. And I will always, if I'm hiking in New Zealand, I will take my tent because I can't sleep with other people unless they're my, you know, they're my partner or my children. I really, it's just any little noise affects me. You know, I mean, I probably snore myself, but you know, it's just people snoring, people breathing, people
Yeah,
coughing.
no, I
It's
hear
just the
you.
movement. And when I am doing a hike like the Camino, which I'm on at the moment, you know, it's not possible to camp. So you are sort of staying in alberges or refugios, you know, or guest houses, where, and I always try and get a private room. I still can't go into a dormitory. I'm way too old for that. So when it comes to camping, I feel very comfortable in my tent. You know, I've got just a great tent and I feel very comfortable, and I love being able to open it up and have a look at a wonderful view outside. Do I feel scared, or nervous? I'm probably more nervous about things like foxes that can be quite territorial. Or other sort of, you know, sort of smaller wildlife which might tear into my tent. I'm not so scared about bears because I'm just, when I have hiked in North America, I have taken a bear canister and had everything smelly right away from the tent, you know. So I've gone, right, okay, well, I've ticked that box. I should be fine. I kind of have this feeling that when you are out in the wilderness, anyone who's going to take advantage of people, they're not going to be out in the wilderness looking for people to take advantage of. They're going to be in the cities, you know, and that's the way that I look at it. That so one would hope that that's right. And it's very rare that you hear about a hiker getting attacked in the wilderness. It's very, very, very rare. In fact, I haven't heard of it. You hear about a lot of people having accidents and that sort of thing, or having to be rescued, but it's while they're on the trail. It's not at night when everything's sort of nice and dark and quiet and peaceful. So,
Yeah, I can remember doing a hike with a friend. This is a number of years ago, and we were both fairly used to the outdoors. And I had certainly grown up in the middle of the forest, and I was leading the trail. There was a few people, and she was bringing up the rear. And it was so funny because at the same time we both burst into song, and didn't, just kept on going. And when I burst into song in a public place, there's a reason because I don't sing well. But anyway, so we did the trail. And driving back into town at night, I sort of said to her, like, you and I burst into song at the same time. And she said, there was something there. And she sensed it. And I said, that's interesting because I thought there was something there too. And probably, I'm on the west coast of Canada, it was probably a cougar because bears are a bit more usually rambunctious, whereas cats are stealthy. But it was so funny just having that gut feeling. And, obviously we didn't abort, but yeah, it was pretty funny. Anyway, so what sort of changes did you see in yourself in that first couple of like year or 2 years?
I became a lot more confident. I mean, I was confident before. I was confident in business, and you know, but I became a lot more confident in myself, and I became a lot happier. I'd walk into a room or I'd meet up with friends. I'd say, "Oh my God, what's wrong? What's happened to you? You look amazing." And
Oh, that's a,
it's
oh dear. How did I look
like,
before?
you get these jaws,
Yeah,
these
oh yeah.
midlife jaws. They kind of evaporated because I had this big smile on my face, and so all my cheeks, my whole face had sort of lifted. It was the cheapest facelift ever, I think. And I felt healthier. I felt a lot more supple. I felt stronger. I felt stronger within myself as well. And that was one of the, it was just this accumulation of a lot of good things. And suddenly I just thought, I can conquer the world,
Ooh, we all need that pill. My goodness.
Yeah.
Now, at what stage did Soul Treaders birth?
Okay, so I was situated in Ecuador for
Okay.
probably about 4 months. So I went down to Ecuador. I was working remotely because a lot of my sort of work was in the northern hemisphere. So it was easier for me to sort of base myself in Central and South America. I did Mexico for 4 months in 2022, and then Ecuador in 2023. And I just thought, I think I'm going to write a blog. And at first, I thought it was just going to be a blog about my stories and that sort of thing. And then suddenly, I got really excited about talking about health and safety and anti-blisters and all sorts of things. And I even wrote an article about the difference between North American and Australian snakes because they are different snakes, and the snake bite management is different. And I really got into this. And then suddenly I sort of thought, well, I'm going to write a book. So I wrote a book called Health, Safety and Hygiene on the Trail. And that's kind of it started because I needed something else to do. I wanted something else apart from, I wanted another hobby. I started it as a hobby, and now it's just become my baby. It's something I love and I enjoy, that's how it started. It started as an interest and just developed into a love.
Oh yeah, no, I can tell by your website. I guess the question that I was sort of browsing through, and I wasn't quite sure. Like you offer all sorts of information, and it is pretty amazing. Do you organize walking groups as well, or is it just education
No, I
and fun?
don't. I don't. Uh,
Okay.
uh, but if anyone wants to join me, yeah, no, I don't, and it's only because I just have this huge list of hikes that I want to go on and I want to write about. I kind of feel that I turned 60 on the Lycian Way in Turkey last week or a couple of weeks ago, and I kind of figure I've got another 15 years of hiking to do. And I just want to see everywhere in the world. But I'm also going to be called back to Australia at some point for grandmotherhood. So, I don't know how long my window is. It could be 10 years, it could be 5, it could be 15. And I hope it's not 15 because I get very jealous with my friends when they've got grandchildren. I go, oh my gosh. But
Well, the voice of experience on my side of it is, and I've said this numerous times, is take advantage of the window when the babies come, because as soon as they're into like the school system, I have five grandchildren not that far away, and I make appointments to see them because between dance class and school and birthday
Yeah.
parties and soccer and all the rest of it, it's they are so
Yeah.
busy that you can go back to your hiking quite easily.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah. No, but I try and I try and educate people as much as possible. And one of and some of the things that concern me most on the in the social media is people say, oh, this hike's amazing, and all these photos, and I see a lot of people asking questions in the Facebook group. What sort of shoes should I wear? What sort of pack should I take? And I'm thinking, this is an advanced hike, and you're asking questions which are very, which really show that you don't have a lot of experience, and I find this quite concerning. So I try with my guides to give as much information as possible, for on everything, navigation, first aid is just so important, because when you are out there, sometimes you do need to fix yourself up. People always say, well, I can always press a little button and call a helicopter, but it doesn't always work like that, especially if the weather is foul. A helicopter will not come and pick you up until the weather is clear enough for a helicopter to, to fly in. So,
Right. Well, I just mentioned the cats, the people that I'm house sitting, cat sitting. They're off in a remote area. And actually, just the night before last, they messaged me and said, we will not be in communication zone for the next 3 days. So
Right.
you can't always rely on pressing that button or the phone or whatever. And then it's a matter of keeping the phone charged as well if you're way out in a remote area. So, yeah, I'm sure you do have to become fairly self-sufficient. My goodness.
And one of the things about the Canary Islands that I'm going to do is a couple of the islands are very, very remote, and I will be probably about I think the longest I'll be without seeing another town is going to be 3 or 4 days. And I don't really, they are very, very remote islands. And it's fine if I do have an accident. I do have a Garmin in reach, so I can sort of push the emergency button. But you also have to think, well, do they have, how many helicopters do they have, rescue helicopters in the area? And a good example of that was when I did the Arctic Circle Trail in Greenland. They have one helicopter for the entire country, for Greenland, only one. And so they have probably about 2,000 people do this trail every year, and out of those 2,000 people doing the trail, they have at least 3 or 4 rescues. Now, out of those 3 or 4 rescues, only one red person really needs rescuing, and the people who organise the rescue helicopters, they basically said, look, we're not going to do this anymore, because we had to come and collect somebody up because they were too cold. Somebody pushed their emergency button because they thought they saw a polar bear, and somebody else did it because they didn't have enough food or something like that. Just that they were ill prepared. And the people with the rescue helicopter said, our helicopter is for fishermen who are out in the, out to sea, or they're for remote communities where somebody might be in labor and might need to get to a hospital. Not for, not for collecting hikers who, aren't organized. And so I think Garmin, all the SOS companies have actually said no to Greenland, so they're not covering Greenland anymore for that reason. So yeah, so you do have to sort of be aware of that as well.
Yeah, I know. I'm on Vancouver Island in Canada, and just
I
north of
love
here, we
Vancouver.
have the West Coast Trail. And, every once in a while, there'll be an article in the paper or on the news saying so and so had to be rescued. They'd fallen 30 feet and broken a leg. Well, you're not going to finish a trail if you've broken your leg or something like that. So,
There's a lot of ladders on that trail, isn't there? Something like
yeah.
how many ladders are there on that trail? I
Oh, yeah,
think
I don't even know. It's way beyond me. Although it was
it's
a portion of the wet Wanda Fuca Trail that my friend and I burst into song on, so
right.
that's all right. Okay, I'm going to keep personal with you, and then I'm going to ask you for a few messages for women in general. The next place I want to go is something that I'm currently doing. I just said that. I've just come off a 9-month series of house sits. Now, mine were local so that I could build up my references for future travel. Give us your message about house sitting.
Right. Okay. So I actually started house sitting when I was working abroad, and it was as a means to stay somewhere where I could be in a house setting, as opposed to a small cramped hotel room. I wanted to be able to have a kitchen. I wanted to be able to have a lounge room. I wanted to be able to have, a dining table to work from. And that was why I actually started house sitting. I was actually looking at Airbnbs for a while. And a friend of mine said, and I said, "Oh my gosh, look at them. They're expensive. They're this, they're that." And a friend of mine said, "Well, why don't you try house sitting?" I thought, "Oh, that sounds like a great idea." I didn't really know anything about it. And so I started to house sit, and it really was a game changer. And now I actually do it sometimes as a holiday destination. For example, we were going to Spain, we were going to southern Spain, and we got a house sit for 3 weeks in Neuja in southern Spain, down in the Algarve. And it was just absolutely amazing looking after this cute dog and this cat, which was. The dog and the cat were really cute by themselves, but they used to fight. This cat would just attack this poor small dog. It was awful. No, but that was how I actually got into it. And I just realized the worth for people who wanted to travel, and especially people who want to travel on a budget, or people who want to travel and they don't, and they want to be able to cook all their own meals, or they don't want to have to go to a hotel in the middle of a big city and knock off all these, go and see the Eiffel Tower, and I go and see the Louvre, and I want to go and see da 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 da. They just want to experience a town or a city, within a local neighborhood, doing local things. I mean, we were shopping at the local market. We ended up meeting the neighbors and having a carver and hors d'oeuvres up on the terrace. It was just absolutely wonderful. It was just amazing. So that's how I got into it. Is that the
Okay.
question?
Pardon? I
Was
think
that
so. I
was the
don't
question,
know.
wasn't it? I think I'll be done.
I'm just enjoying chatting with you. Ah, dear. Well, and as you say too, if you get a hotel room, first of all, they're really expensive no matter where you go. I just, ended up spending a few nights in a small town and I paid a lot of money for a hotel room. But as you say, like if you go back to the hotel, oh gee, do I sit on the bed or do I sit in this one goofy little barrel chair? Whereas if you're in a home, then you can go in the kitchen and pour yourself a glass of wine. You can go sit on a sofa and put your feet up, maybe turn on a TV or whatever. I'm same thing. I'm set up here, and I mean it's great for me being local because I've got my second monitor. Like I spread out way more than I could if I was traveling. But yeah, it's just such a great way to
It
experience
really
places.
is. And that, I mean, I think I did about 10 to 12 years of corporate travel. And so I've spent a lot of time in hotel rooms. I've gone down to the restaurant, to the bar downstairs to get my meal, and I've sat at a table by myself. I've had, men who haven't even bothered to take their wedding rings off to, come and talk to me. And like, oh, for heaven's sake, and so especially if you're a female traveler by yourself, sometimes going to a city can be, or anywhere, for example, can actually be quite intimidating. And I kind of got used to sort of being by myself for corporate travel, and during my corporate travel days. But just being able to walk into the kitchen, or you can order takeaway, you don't have to cook yourself, but being able to eat and sit down curled up on the sofa, you don't have to worry about getting home from the restaurant back to your hotel. There's a lot of security. It's a very safe way to travel, isn't it?
Yeah, and I notice it's the little things too. And I've explained to the people who I sit for is, because they're saying, well, this is here and that's there. And because I usually have pre-meats because I'm local. And I always say, like, okay, that doesn't really matter. But the one place I guarantee I'm going to be opening all the cupboards is in the kitchen, because it's like, I need a bit of garlic powder, or do they have this, or do they have that, And it's just, yeah, so it's nice, As I say, little things like garlic powder. If you're going to cook yourself a meal, you're not going to go out and buy a whole package of garlic powder, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Exactly. And the funny thing is that really everybody's kitchen is so similar. Everybody's kind of got the same things in all the drawers. You know,
Exactly.
everyone's kind of got that third drawer down, which has all the stuff in it.
Junk drawer.
It's just been great. And I've actually made friends with a lot of the people that I've sat for. And when I come back from the Canary Islands, we're actually going to go and visit some of the people that we made friends with as well, which is lovely.
One sit that I just recently came off of, she had left me a list of, emergency contacts, if something goes wrong or the hot water tank blows up or something. And so I'm going down, and then she messaged me just before they got on the plane to go the long distance. And she said, I hope you don't mind. I've given your name and phone number to my friend. And, she gave me the name, and I'm going, why is that name familiar? And I've had a career in elder care, so I sort of went in that direction thinking, oh, do I know her? Ended up Googling her, of course. Found her on Facebook, and I messaged right away and said, oh my God, she belongs to the same car club as me. So, it's just that's the world, like you just always have a connection. If you can figure it out, there's always a connection. So, okay,
Absolutely.
so again, you did not keep your knowledge to yourself. You have created the House Sitting Collective.
So the House Sitting Collective, I run courses on how to house sit, and I also have House Sitting 101, which has a lot of information on house sitting. House Sitting Collective is the educational part of House Sitting 101. So House Sitting 101, there's a few sort of cheat sheets. I have quite a lot of freebies, which is sort of emergency contact list downloads and all sorts of things like that. But I go right into how to write your application, how to use power words to sort of make sure that what you actually write gets noticed by the homeowner. I feel that the whole house sitting has just exploded, and I think it's increasing by about 12% per annum. So when we say it's exploded, it really has. It's huge, and this is it's due to a lot of things. It's especially if you're in the UK, now it's almost impossible for people to take their pets, or it's very, very expensive for people to take their dogs over to Europe, whereas before Brexit they could just put the dog in the car and get on the ferry or the train or whatever, drive across to the Europe. And now they can't, for British people to actually take the dog over to Europe, it has to go through all of these vet certifications and whatnot. So
Immunizations and
house sitting in the UK is huge. It's incredible. I bet if I had a look on one of the apps right now, I would probably and had a look at the map of the UK, it would just be totally coloured out with sets available. And same with America as well. I mean, there's a lot of people because people just no longer want to put their pets into into kennels. I mean, putting pets in kennels is, to a lot of homeowners now, is just like putting their pet into prison. And it kind of, and I, and it sort of has that sort of connotation. Oh, I can't put, Bruno in the kennel. That would just be horrible. And they kind of, and they know that the house is going to be looked after, their pets are going to be looked after, and it gives the homeowners this peace of mind that they can go away and everything is secure when they get home, and their dog or their cat is just happy. And that's just, it's just incredible. It really is an incredible concept. And so a lot of people are asking, well, how did you get into it? And, can you have a look at my application? Is this right? And I said, well, you really need to put yourself, you need to tell the homeowner straight away why you're a good fit for them. And okay, so you're applying for the sit and they're living out in the country. You don't even like the country, Oh, yes, I know, but okay, well, what about this one? So there's all sorts of things that I go into in using power words and how to use power words for your application and for your profile. And then I go into what you need to do for the sit, especially what sort of questions do you need to ask for the meet and greet. So you're saying that you do a meet and greet all the time, and it's really important. And sometimes I haven't been able to do a physical meet and greet, so it's been conducted by in on by video, and that's happened on more than one occasion. And so yeah, so I go in, there's a lot in my courses, also about how to exit your sit, what you need to do, and I have a full cleaning checklist and all sorts of things like that, just to make it really easy.
It's funny because I recently got an application, or like I got somebody sent me an application to take care of their pets. And because of my references, they said, well, apparently you are the house sitter to get. And I mean, nothing feels better than to say, okay, I'm starting to get where I want to be, where people are going to look at my references and say, oh, yeah, let's talk to this person for sure. But now, if I can go personal with you, you also have lipedemia. Now, I'll admit I had to look that one up. Tell us about lipedemia. If
Okay,
you don't mind,
so
if if you're okay with it.
no, not at all. My legs resemble little elephant trotters. So basically, it's when you have a problem with your lymph, your lymph system, and you don't you ha you, your lymph fluid does not drain as it should. And my legs are extremely heavy, and they can be quite painful sometimes. And this can be quite hard when I'm walking, when I'm hiking up a hill. So that basically that's what, and it affects a lot of women after menopause. And mine started as soon as I hit menopause. I was like, gosh, my legs are really fat. Like, goodness. And, and my upper arms, what's happening? And a lot of it is, it is very, very poor drainage. And what it does is it results in what's known as lipedema fat, and which is kind of a little bit unsightly, but it also gives you very, very heavy legs as well.
Okay. Now, your current lifestyle with all this walking, hiking, etc., does that in fact help with your lipedemia?
Well, yeah, not really.
Okay.
Things like trying to keep a diet with anti-inflammatory foods. If I have a couple of glasses of wine, I can really feel it in my face. I can really swell up like a little balloon. And I wear compression tights at night. I actually find that when I am hiking, my legs can actually swell up quite a lot more. So, yeah.
Okay. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, because you sort of think there's so many conditions, in air quotes again,
Yeah.
that your lifestyle would have them just totally dissipate.
Yeah.
But I guess the one good thing about your lifestyle is it makes you really strong in terms of having to get those big legs, heavy legs moving around your
Yes.
life.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, I must admit, I do feel that my lifestyle has stopped the progression.
Okay.
Halt it, completely slowed down the progression, because I think there's four stages, and I would say I'm up to about stage two, and I've seen quite a bit of increase over the last couple of years, but I haven't been as active over the last couple of years as I was the 3 years previous. So it re I really just need to I th I just really need to sort of look after myself and stop any more progression. That's it, and use compression tights and that. So yeah,
Well,
it's
you've
fine.
proven you can do that because after looking in the mirror, you said, "Okay, what am I going to do about this?"
Yeah,
So obviously,
exactly. And you know, and I and I'm and I wear clothes that sort of hide it, and that sort of thing. Like, you know, you won't see me out in a bikini, put it that way, but you know, it doesn't matter.
I do not have lymphedema, and you won't see me in a bikini either. Oh dear. Okay, so we've covered, like, I guess my main three subjects about you. I want to talk about women in general because that's our audience, and your life renewment. I love that word. I don't know if I invented it, but I use it a lot. Where do women usually surprise themselves when they try something as new as, like, when you went into hiking?
Okay, so I think everybody's different, especially when you're in midlife. You've been As women, we're carers for everybody. We're carers for our children, our husbands, people in the workplace,
Parents.
you know, and we feel like we've given everything of ourselves to everybody else. And that was how I felt that day. And I think once you actually start doing things for yourself, that's when you actually see the big change, and that's when you have that aha moment, and that's when you feel good about yourself. It's after you've been able to do something for yourself as opposed to something for everybody else. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I still love entertaining. I love putting food on the table. I love cooking for other people. You know, it's something that I absolutely adore. But you know, I like doing that because I actually like cooking. So, but you know, it's just that whole concept of being the mother and the carer. You know, you're not the, and I was the provider as well. So, for my family, but it's when you can sort of strip all those away and just do something just for yourself. And this is what I really like about multi-day hiking, especially in the wilderness, is because it strips everything bare. You have to look after yourself. You know, what's the weather like? Am I too cold? Am I hungry? Am I tired? Am I hydrated enough? Have I had enough electrolytes? You know, where am I going to camp tonight? What time is it? Is it, you know, and you're waking up the first thing in the morning when it gets light. And when it gets dark, you're going to bed, and your body gets into this rhythm, which is almost natural. It's almost a primal thing. You
Yeah, I'm
know,
sure it is.
everything is completely stripped back. And that to me is something that really makes me happy, and it makes me healthy. And I think when, as women, you know, when we have when we when we've reached this midlife and we've given everything to everybody else, sometimes that kind of bare bones can just seem so remote.
Yeah. Well, I know the look on your face when you were telling me about that first hike that your friend insisted that you accompany her on. And you got back, and I mean, your face was just glowing because it was like you were remembering that feeling of success and accomplishment and all the rest of it. Yeah. Is there anything that the trail teaches you that life probably couldn't?
I think it's basically that there isn't actually any fear as long as you know what you're doing and you have an understanding of yourself. Like, for example, if you're on a trail and you can see and you know that you're above the tree line and you see thunderstorm clouds, you know that you need to get down below the tree line. There's a few things that you know that you need to do, and but I feel that once you know that you know the signs that you're thirsty, you know the signs that you're hungry, you know the signs that you're cold, you know the signs that you're, too hot, that you could have a heat related illness or a cold related illness, like, hypothermia or whatever. If as long as you can look after yourself and you can adapt and make sure that you're in a safe space in terms of everything, it gives you that confidence. You feel that you could conquer the world because you're on top of everything. I think that's what it, I think that's what it can teach you. It can teach you that you can do it. You can do anything. I really do think it can. And when I was in Greenland and I did that hiking, there was a couple of days where I didn't see anybody for well over 48 hours. And I got to this small hut, and it was one of the last stops before you get into Sisimiut. And it had been really, really hot. Hot polar sun. Can you work in Celsius?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So
Our listeners don't, but I do.
it was about 40 Celsius. So
Oh,
what's 40
wow.
Celsius in
Oh, my God.
Fahrenheit?
So, well over 100 degrees for our US listeners.
But it probably wasn't. It was probably about 30 Celsius, but because of the hot polar sun, the sun was
Wow.
intensified. And there's no trees. There's no trees in Greenland. So the funny thing is that it's absolutely silent because there's no birds. It's
Okay.
absolutely silent. It's one of the most silent places I've ever been. And so I got to the small hut, and when I'm saying a small hut, I'm talking about probably about 10 foot by 6 foot. That's how big the
Okay.
hut is, and it has a bunk, a raised bunk with three mattresses on, and it has a wood fire. I don't know where they get the wood from to put the wood for, to put to light the fire, but this is what the hunters use. And that night, the winds came and a storm came, and this little red wooden hut was anchored down to a large flat rock by thick metal rope, the metal wires,
Yeah,
probably
cable.
about this thick. And if I'm putting my for the listeners, I'm putting my thumb and my forefinger together, so they're really quite probably about an inch and a half,
Heavy duty
diameter.
cables, yeah.
And but the little hut was going from side to side, and I was the only one up there, and I was up in this little bunk going, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And I thought, this hut has been here for, I don't know, probably about 20 years. And the hunters, because everyone in Greenland hunts. I mean, I was given seal meat. I was actually given a little bit of whale meat as well, but it was real. Seal meat was actually really quite interesting. And I thought, it's been here for ages. This hut has been tied down with these metal ropes for donkey's years. Well, not donkey's years, but several years. If it blows over, it blows over, and there's nothing I can do about it. But I don't think it will. And it's going from side to side, and it's starting to snow outside. And I'm going, well, this is interesting. So the next day it was snowing, and it was cold, and the wind was still raging. And I actually had enough food, and I thought, right, okay, well, I have enough food for another couple of days, and I'm only a day out of Sisimiut. I'm sure somebody will come soon. And I just believed in myself that somebody would come. And later on that evening, the door opened, and in walked two Greenlandic ladies with a bottle of Jägermeister.
Oh dear.
Completely came to here, and they sort of, yeah, we're here. And then they said, next morning, off we go. And I said, are you sure it's safe? And they said, yeah, it's fine. And off they went. And I sort of followed them over the pass. Like, I'm come, don't go too fast. I'm right behind you.
Hearing is self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Like, that's such an accomplishment, and especially for us city women, you
Yeah.
know, we're used to our creature comforts, and just to know. So
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah.
Now, can you suggest like a small, almost everyday adventure that a woman could try that genuinely can shift that confidence just enough to try the next thing?
Right. Okay. So I would say make your walk in a green space. So a green space where you have a path which isn't concrete. If you can try and find a trail around which doesn't have concrete, which isn't concrete, which is what I would call a formed path. So maybe has some raised, you're walking over some roots, maybe some gravel, some stones, and that will give you a sense of movement, and it'll train your feet to sort of be able to walk and move, and the muscles in your feet to adapt to the ground underneath you. When we go for a walk in suburbia, we're walking on say a footpath, and we're doing the same movement all the time. Your feet aren't adapting to each route, to each incline, each decline, or stones or anything like that. You're not watching for all these little obstacles which are in your way, which also sort of make your brain sort of connect with the rest of your body to be able to handle all of the variances on your path. And also just be mindful and notice, when you're walking through the trees or, what, and I'm not talking about, you don't have to go to Greenland. You can just go down to your local park and try and walk amongst the trees, and just notice the trees, and just let your nervous system just relax within nature. That's what I would say.
I just feel like we can finish this now, and I'm going to go for a walk now. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want our audience, midlife women, to think about after listening to this,
Okay.
or as they
So
listen to
you
this?
asked me before that when I was okay, if I hiked solo, and I said, well, no, because I've met someone now, but I want to tell my story about how I met my partner.
Okay.
Because it really, for anyone out there who is single, or you might be widowed, or whatever your situation is, I met my partner on a bus. We were walking, we were traveling, we were both on the bus to go to Hadrian's Wall, to walk Hadrian's Wall, which goes across the UK. And what I think what I'm trying to say is that surprises can be around every corner. They really can. And it is quite a lovely story, if I tell you the whole story. But do you want to know the whole story?
Now I'm curious. Yeah, absolutely.
So I was up in the north of England, and I was in the city of Carlisle, and I was making my way to Hadrian's Wall. And so I got on the bus, and there were only a couple of other people on the bus, and I got on, and I had my coffee in one hand, and I had a meat pie in the other hand, and I was trying. The bus was just taking off, and I was knocking on the window. I really want to get on this bus. There's only two buses a day to the end of Hadrian's Wall. And there was this, and I sat down, and I still had my pack, and I had my coffee and everything like this. And there was this man behind me, and I handed him my coffee, and he said, "Can you hold this for me, please?" And he went, "Sure," in a New Zealand accent. And I went, "Oh," because I was born in New Zealand, so Hello. Anyway, so Henry said, "Oh, I'm going to Hadrian's Wall too." So we started walking. We had this lovely, lovely conversation, and it was just wonderful. And we talked all day. And then, I did the Greenland hike, and so I said, "Well, I'm going." He said, "I'm going back to New Zealand." And I thought, "Oh, that's nice. Well, it was nice talking to you." And anyway, so 12 months later, I'd finished the Greenland hike, and he messaged me and said, "Oh, I'm back in the UK, and I was wondering if I can talk to you about hiking gear." And I went, "Oh, yes, okay. Who are you again?"
Yeah, right.
And then, anyway, so we ended up going for a hike, and he just said, "I have loved you since the moment I met you a year ago."
Oh my goodness.
And that was, and
Yeah.
we've been together ever since. So we've been out hiking the Camino together. So I think I just wanted to just say, look, there are surprises around every corner. And I think we just need to, as women or anybody listening, you just need to sort of take as much from life as you can, and just try and look for the silver lining in every cloud. That's all I can say.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, what a thank you for sharing your story. I'm going to get into where we find you, and then I have a personal question. Actually, I was going to ask you about the fact that you don't really travel alone anymore. And I thought, well, I never get into people's personal relationships, so I've actually got a different one because now we know. Okay, so where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Okay, so Soul Treader, if you want to know about hiking, it's soultreader.com. And as Agnes did mention, I am on the Camino at the moment, doing the Portuguese Camino. If anyone is interested in the Camino, it's a great way to start to walk long distances, especially through small towns. Great coffee, great food, and it's a wonderful way to travel. And all my writings for the Camino will be up shortly as well. And for house sitting, it's the House Sitting Collective. And for anyone listening, there is a 25% discount for all courses, and it's Boomer 25.
Ooh.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, there's always show notes. And for listeners who are sort of trying to hit that 15 seconds back button, it doesn't matter. It'll be in the show notes.
Right.
Okay. So now I do have a personal question, if you don't mind, now that you already told us the new partner story. We've talked about house sitting and solo hiking, extreme solo hiking. You've also worked on water projects in Africa. We didn't even get to that. What was the biggest push out of your comfort zone that you not only handled, you handled it well, and maybe even surprised yourself a bit at how well you handled it? Keep thinking, because I can edit out the extra 10 seconds.
Oh.
What I'm seeing is that you've risen to the challenge and you're just used to it.
I know. My mind's running. I'm going through all these hikes, and I have absolutely enjoyed. I think the one, okay. So the one time where I really felt that I rose to the challenge was my hike through Australia's Red Centre on the Larapinta Trail. It was probably one of my earlier hikes, and I think it was my fifth overnight hike, my fifth multi-day hike. Well, not overnight hike, multi-day hike. And it's very long. It takes about 14 to 15 days. It's 270 kilometers, but it is the elevation and the ascent and daily ascent and descent is just insane. And the desert is just incredible. The Australian desert is just It is just one of those wow moments. You know, you can be out there. It was freezing cold at night, and I used to, I would take the top of my tent off,
The fly.
the fly,
Yeah.
and it would just be like a sky of diamonds. It was absolutely beautiful. But I think that was the time that I really, really pushed myself. Water was an issue. The elevation, the heat, the heat during the day was an issue. The wind, when it got up, it would almost blow you over. And it was one of those hikes where, or one of those times in my life where I just really wanted to prove it. I really, really wanted to prove that I could do this. You know, the Larapinta Trail is kind of known to be quite difficult, and I thought, no, I can do this. I can do this, and I really pushed myself on that. I really pushed myself, and there were a couple of stages where I thought, "Oh, I don't know if I can keep going," and I did, and I did, and I came off there just so proud of myself.
Oh, that's very cool. And listeners, what I'm also hearing is make sure you know what you're getting yourself into, you know, like in terms of if you're, well, you know, like if you're not experienced, you do not want to do this trail. You know, like you have to have some knowledge and some smarts and some confidence in yourself. I'm very impressed. Okay. Website links, you know, both of them will be in the show notes. All of the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, Belinda has given us quite a bit to think about. What part of her journeys impressed you the most, inspired you the most? Talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Was there a question I didn't ask, Belinda? There probably is, because this should probably have been three episodes. Ask it in the comments. I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. We're all at the stage where we could do with some inspiration to not settle. Maybe today's conversation has given you some ideas. Sharing this episode with a friend will birth the conversation needed to inspire bigger dreams. If you need more inspiration, check out my annual chats with Nomad Gila Melamed, or jump back to December 22, 2022, when my guest was Kathleen Donnelly Israel. She walked solo, walked her first Camino in her 70s. So there we go. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite podcast platform. It helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and the content there is expanding this year. A reminder to check out the resource tab at boomwithabang.com. Belinda Coker, thank you for being my guest today. You really are an inspiration that I think that you're only done if you think you're done. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
There we go. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Agnes. It was wonderful. It was wonderful chatting with you.
Have a great rest of the week.